about those areas of healing, that that's what we need to focus on. And that's what I'd like to focus on for the rest of the podcasts, with me sharing my views and my ideas, because I'm an echo of my past. I'm a reflection, right from childhood till today, 72 years of age. You know, what I say, I heard, I seen, I felt, I smelt, I touched in the air. And I reflect that back to you. I've read, I've listened to speakers, I've been to ceremonies, I've been in circles and meetings and conferences, and I reflect those out to the world, what I hear, what makes sense to me, what I accept. So that's what I was, you know, because the podcasts are going to be about let the healing begin for all of us, one by one. So the area that I'm going to share next, my reflections on, my views on, is in regards to family and community. And that's a tough part for me personally, you know, and I can imagine it might be for others too. Because I can change myself. Like you've heard me say, every day we wake up, we can change our mind. I changed my mind. I can change my mind. I can take care of this body. I can strengthen my spirit by doing ceremony and ritual consistently. And I do. Now, when it comes to family, of course, we're talking about great-grandparents, grandparents, uncles and aunties, father and mother, siblings, cousins, you know, in-laws, you know, that's what we're talking about, family. And, you know, I've thought of our lives as residential school survivors. We could be angry. I was angry at the church, at Roman Catholics, at Canadians, at British people. I was angry and it grew to a hate and, you know, and I was unhealthy. You know, so I could be angry at that. And I thought, oh my gosh, the younger generations that did not go to residential school, you know, were raised by residential school survivors. Like, we went home without healing from the traumas of residential school. So we were bringing the residential school home, and we caused pain and suffering with our family members. And I thought, oh my gosh, that must hurt even more. Because I was blaming the government, the church, you know, British people. Because I felt they hurt me. They hurt me. I was damaged goods. And I was thinking about the children and grandchildren, the children of survivors, hurt by survivors. I thought, oh my gosh, because I've been hurt by some of my own people when I was a teenager. You know, I've been called a stupid Indian because I didn't know my language and I come back from a residential school. That hurt. Oh my gosh, that hurt. It impacted me for years. I had to get some healing around that. And it was inner work because the guy that said that was long gone into the spirit world by the time I sobered up. So the complexities of doing that family work, you know, it takes a commitment. First off, by saying, yes, I want to be family. You know, it's just like when you heal your body, you start to say to your body, I love you, body. I'm going to take care of you, body. Or talking to your mind. I'm going to free you from those negative thoughts. And when we talk about spirit, we're saying each day I get stronger. Now with family, I struggled for years just around the word love, wanting to tell people I love them. But not, it's not that I didn't know how. It was awkward for me because we didn't use those words. We didn't hear them at the residential school. And plus, we never ever talked about what this love is amongst each other. Not saying that we have to. But, I heard a speaker. Remember, I'm a reflection of the speakers, the elders, the facilitators, the teachers, relatives and friends. I heard this facilitator say, love is not a feeling, it's a commitment. And the example this facilitator used was when they put the baby on the mother's breast, that mother saying, I'm going to nourish you, I'm going to take care of you. That's a commitment. So that commitment, when it's consistent with respect and kindness, good feelings flow between us two human beings and what sort of people nowadays call love. So, commitment to each other as family, as brothers and sisters, as children, as grandchildren, as cousins. You know, it's one of the statements I use especially with youth, you know, it probably could be for everyone. I have done it with adults too. And I remember I'd done it with prisoners once in a prison. I said, when I count to three, I want everybody to say to me, Jerry, I have a voice. And I do one, two, three, and I'd hear these people say, Jerry, I have a voice. And I say, okay, I'm going to do it one more time. Let's say it with feeling. One, two, three, Jerry, I have a voice. I'd hear it, you know. Then I'd say to them, use that voice to build, not to destroy. Use that voice to heal, to encourage, to support each other. And that's what one of my conclusions around family is that we must do that consistently. Encourage, support. I was in a residential school workshop somewhere in BC. I'm not sure if it was in Chilcotin country or Carrier country, but I heard this one auntie say, teach, don't scold. And that resonated with me. Because you teach someone, then they're going to do it properly. But if you're scolding someone for not doing it properly, you know, they're going to have an issue with you. They're going to, you know, rebel against you. That's being human. That's what happens. So, you know, reconciliation is important work in our community, just amongst the families. Because we all make mistakes. We're all human beings. We all get weak. We get selfish. We get greedy. You know, all of those things that happen to all human beings. So when we do make those mistakes, how do we fix it? What do we do? How do we heal it? How do we make it original again? Before we start, we hurt each other or disappointed each other. I don't care about each other. What do we do? I have a couple of examples of it. And I've been working since 1976. I got called to a community and there was a concern for one of the young women that was involved in an accident and was blaming herself and she became suicidal. So I went to that community and I believe there was I don't know, jeepers, over 40 of us in that room, in that little hall. And they wanted, the ones that called me from the family, wanted to see if we can fix this. We can help her. So we done it over 2 days. And I believe, you know, when we do it right, the facilitation, because facilitate means make it easy for them to speak about their issues and about learning how to support each other. So I was a facilitator. We had a sharing circle. And we're talking, I had them talk about their feelings. First off, about themselves. Then about what happened with the young lady. And I sat beside the young lady because she was going to be the last. And you have a circle like that. Some people are scared to talk. Some people aren't afraid to. So it went around, you know, and lots of concern, lots of support. You know, over there, when it got to the young lady, one of the things he had to do is saying, what I'm going to do to help. You know, but there were ones in that circle when they talked about their own feelings, their own, what they want to change about themselves. And they shared their mistakes. And it got to the young lady, she didn't feel alone. But she had a hard time to speak. She was sitting there and she started weeping. And I knelt beside her and I said, I will be your voice. I will speak to them. And I had someone bring a glass of water and she took a sip and started to get herself grounded again. And she said, I thought they all blamed me. I thought they didn't like me. I thought, look at what I done. Look at the mistake I made. And I thought everybody here didn't like me. She started crying, and I stood up and I said to the people, if it's in your spirit to come up, I want you to come up and whisper some words in her ear. Words of support and encouragement. Oh, they all lined up. So that's an example of repairing a relationship. So it takes courage from that family and commitment to come together as a family. I done another circle with another family when the father was and got cancer and he wanted to connect with his children and grandchildren. Again, we done it circle style. Again, this one I had them whisper to the survivor, what they appreciated about them, that they want to be part of the family. So they done that. I guess it's about connecting with words and sometimes hugs or a handshake or just being there for each other. Because I remember I asked this elder, what do we do when someone's really suffering? You know, like their spirit has been cut and they're just sitting there and they're like traumatized. He says, oh, I see what you're getting at. He says, he's so wise and so gentle. He says, what we were taught to do. He says, you go to that person, not too close, and you tell them, I'm here if you need a hug. I'm here to listen if you want to talk. And if you don't want to do either of those, I'm still here to support you and I'll sit here quietly with you. I'm here for you. So I have taken that teaching and used it. And one time I had done it, I was sitting there, probably 5 minutes, we're just sitting quietly. Then the one that was hurting started to talk. What was on his mind. You know, so when we start to disclose our troubles to another human being. I was told 50% of the stress leaves our body. So I suggest that we all start small, start slow. Don't put too much expectations on yourself. Sometimes it's just like saying good morning to someone you haven't talked to and a family member. Or hello. Hey, I was thinking about you. Good thoughts. You know, start somewhere. Even if it's just saying hello. How are you doing? You know, start to make those connections. You know, the systems that we lived through divided us. Let's not let them win. Let's put it in our mind. You know, and some we'll do that, and sometimes we have to wait a long time before they come to us when we do apologize to a family member. But just, I realize people are healing on their time. And I healed on my time. It took me many years of work. I sobered up and I was 27 years of age, and 50 I was still learning how to express my feelings to people that were close to me. So it's good to be realistic with what we set out for ourselves in regards to family. And we can do that, make sure it's one step at a time, one day at a time, you know, and each day we can change our mind with our families too. And sometimes it might not meant to be, I was thinking of. You know, and I was told that how it used to be, it's how the elders when I was young used to talk, because they were connected to how it just used to be. They were born into it. Our culture, our heritages, our traditions. And when, the parents have a child and they're having a hard time with that child, the clan would meet and they'd say, okay, well, we're going to go talk to that mother and father and say, it's best if you let the grandparents or uncles and aunties raise that child. Because it just then wasn't fitting. It wasn't working. And that's a reality for all of us. Sometimes it doesn't work. And I say that so we won't think it's going to be perfect. There's some people we just don't connect with. Family are people out in the world. You know, I think that's the way it is to be human. But just be respectful with those ones that you don't connect with. Don't disrespect them. You know, there's no need to get into that just because we don't connect. You know, so that's with the families. And in the olden days, there used to be matriarchs. They'd organize the birthdays or whatever the gatherings are going to be and make sure people are involved, you know, and everybody listen to the matriarch. It's time to go picking mushrooms, and everybody would go pick mushrooms. It's time to dry salmon, everybody go dry salmon, you know. And reminders of how to be as family. You know, and I think one of the things, too, is the importance of uncles and aunties. Uncles and aunties at times were the best teacher for the children of your brothers or your sisters. Because when you grow up in the same house, you make mistakes with each other. Or you get into arguments that you don't finish. And your parents will be telling you something and you don't listen, and the uncle comes in or the auntie and tells you the same thing and you listen. And you get it. I've seen that happen. It happened with me. So we need to go back to some of those old ways of uncles and aunties becoming involved. with her nephews and nieces and cousins. In our way, the cousins would call us uncle or auntie, too. So, you know, and to teach each other, to teach the children. And I remember being taught, you know, this is now that we're taught to be relational in community. That means to be part of the community. Participate, be participant. Like you hear that saying, it takes a community to raise a child. That's the way it was when I was young, when I was a child. We could be playing with children, or we'd be walking around, and it's lunchtime, they call us in, come and eat. And we go eat. And my mother and father say, when they do that, you eat whatever they put in front of you. You don't say no. Because if you say no, they'll never feed you again, maybe. You know? Plus, appreciate what they're doing. I think I told this story. My brother and I were walking back. We went swimming in another lake. And we're walking back, and it's getting evening. And we're halfway home, and Elder sees us. Hey, boys, come on, it's getting dark. There's a black bear over there or something. You guys go home in the morning. And he fed us and fixed blankets on the floor for us to sleep on and played his accordion until we went to sleep. I don't remember my mother and father being upset about that or worried about it. Because I believe we're all doing the same thing then. You know, so when it comes to community, participate, help each other. You know, it's, I believe that's why we're so healthy. Because it was an inclusive space. And there's always encouragement coming from elders. Doesn't matter if you're a relative or not, when they see you doing something good, they say, way to go, hey, that's great, you know. Teach you. Encourage you. Support you. That's a community. I remember my granny saying, son, there never used to be locks in any of the houses. You can go in any house if you're hungry and help yourself. She said, we always were with each other. And I remember that story of my grandmother. Their house burnt down and her husband cleaned up the area where the house was, the foundation. They used rocks for foundation for that log house. So he cleaned it up and he cut the logs and hauled them with his horses. When he had all the logs he needs, my mother was saying that they're living in a tent. And my grandmother fixed him breakfast and he didn't start building that day. And my mother said they went out and there were men from the community there saying, hey, we come to help. And the house went up like that. That's community. That's being together. So we need to go those ways, you know, and we need to sit together, talk about how we want to live, agree with each other, what's harmful for our children, what's not good for our children, and work together. I know it's a big ask, it's a big dream, but I believe it can be done. And we're going to go that way again. Because of the way the world is unfolding, we're going to need to support each other again. I remember that story of my mother saying when she was a little girl, they go picking blueberries up on top of the mountain. And they get there and somebody put out big covering on the ground, probably deer hide sewed together. And everybody would put all the food they brought, because they're going to be there drying berries, and the men are going to dry deer meat. All the food would go in the middle. Then there'd be cooks assigned. They'd cook for everybody while they're picking berries. Men are hunting. She said that was the way it was. And she said she remembered that one family one time camped away from the camp. Didn't put their food there. And my mother, my late mother, said that was when we started to break apart. That was the beginning. So how do we get back together again? Because there's lots of mistakes between each other in our communities. Well, we need to let those mistakes go and admit we all make mistakes. And starting over again, I heard an elder in Ireland say, let's turn the page, you know, let's move on. And I feel that's what we need to do. And that takes conversations, sitting down around the fire and talking about how we want to live together as a group of people. Start really simple. That it's not our way here to swear at each other, for instance, to really hurt each other with words. It's not our way. That we must be respectful and generous the way we were raised when we were young. Talking about my parents and my grandparents. I was raised, you know, just at that, I call it the dividing line. After that, there was more violence, there was more drinking, more drugging, accidents, different things happening, different mistakes, some of them that didn't have to happen. We need to sit down and come up with plans of action of how we're going to talk to our children, how we're going to role model for our children. Understand that our children absorb everything and they become copycats. So if they walk around hurting each other with words because they watched us do that, so we must take responsibility and be careful and sincere with our words when we're speaking to other human beings. Go back to those teachings, because that's a teaching. You know, to work as a team. I was asking the elder, how do you live in a relationship? And he says, you work like a team. Everybody works, everybody does something, everybody contributes. And that's a lot of, it makes good sense, because when we resent people in our household, it's because life feels unfair. Like, how come I have to always cook or wash the dishes or do the laundry or sweep the floor or, you know, take care of the house? If that's happening, there's going to be resentment in the air. So we must all pitch in our community, in our households, and our children will follow us. So this is my introduction to Let the Healing Begin. So I'll close by saying, let the healing begin for us one by one. Let the healing begin for the families. Let the healing begin for our communities. And I know we can do this. So thank you for listening to Teachings in the Air. I look forward to this season because I'm looking for people to talk to that think change, that want change. So watch out for on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of the things we have for the upcoming podcasts. Thank you.
The Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival is back. Still Moon Arts Society is proud to announce the 22nd annual Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. A fusion of art, nature, and community, this month-long festival celebrates the Harvest Moon, Still Creek, local art, and the diverse cultural traditions of the Renfrew Collingwood neighbourhood. Attendees can expect dazzling lanterns, live music, dance, food, art and nature workshops, and community performances, all including making salmon lanterns, mooncakes, and guided tours. Connect with the local nature as a community to raise awareness and bring positive change to restore Renfrew Ravine to its natural beauty. Learn more and register at stillmoonarts.ca.